Today is Tuesday, May 6th, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. Hamas accepts a ceasefire deal proposal, but there's a catch. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating. You can email us your thoughts as well, or just say hello, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. Joining me now to get through the news of the Trey Gons Phillips, Billy Hallowell. A lot to get to on the pod today, guys. Billy, starting with these police officers in Pakistan who reportedly refused to help a Catholic family.
Yeah, pretty crazy, horrific story. Lots of background to it, but this family is basically destitute. They've lost everything. We'll get into their story today.
Yeah, they definitely need our prayers. And the main thing, Billy also caught up with Dr. Michael Brown. We're going to check out that conversation. Breaking down the Jezebel spirit, if you remember the Mark Driscoll saga that sort of unfolded at a men's conference where he accused them of having the Jezebel spirit. Well, take a closer look at what is that? And that's today's main thing. So looking forward to those stories. And don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already done so to all of our CBN News podcasts, including DC Debrief. That's once a week on Fridays. John Stolness and Billy's Newsmakers, full-length interview each and every weekday. Make sure you're getting on board with those podcasts. You can do so in the description of this podcast. The links to follow them are in there. So go ahead and do that, and then we are going to head on over to the news now in 90 seconds. And in the span of just a few short hours yesterday, Israel issued an ultimatum to anyone living near Rafah to evacuate immediately. And then Hamas announced that it agreed to a ceasefire proposal, but it was put forward by Egypt and Qatar, and it didn't mention the Israeli hostages. It was announced by the terror group Hamas, the deal itself, and Israel didn't immediately respond to it as an invasion of Rafah is still imminent. MIT will no longer require prospective hires to pledge allegiance to the principles of DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, as an employment condition as they previously did so. That makes them the first major university in the country to do away with this practice. And in a statement, they said, requests for a statement on diversity will no longer be part of applicants for any faculty positions at MIT. And Sally Kornbluth, who is the president, said, we can build an inclusive environment in many ways, but compelled statements impinge on freedom of expression and they don't work. A Pennsylvania pastor says he's grateful to God for his life after a man attempted to shoot him during a Sunday sermon, but his gun jammed. Those are just some of today's top stories. You can check out more of them over at cbnnews.com. Couple things I want to talk about quick here, guys. First, this pastor, your reaction to that. That video is remarkable. It's over on cbnnews.com. And Pastor Glenn Germany just started his sermon, and this gentleman that he didn't know got up and pointed a gun at him, pulled the trigger, but nothing happened. And then a good Samaritan and a hero, really, inside the church went up immediately and then tackled the man, and they were able to subdue him. But what a wild video that was.
What a miracle, right? Yeah. That it didn't end up going the way that it could have. And you just, man, I don't know. You wonder what in the world was going on there. And I'm sure we're going to learn a lot more about the ins and the outs of the case. I know there's another relative of this gunman as well who was reportedly found deceased. So it's a crazy story.
I was just actually talking to a friend yesterday about how easy it is to kind of dismiss things when they happen, both good and bad. As like, if it's a bad thing, it's easy to say it's just a bad thing. There's no spiritual warfare there. And if there was a good thing that happened, like this gun jamming, it's easy to just think, well, that was just a coincidence. But that very well could have been the Lord intervening there and protecting this pastor from something obviously much, much more serious happening. So praise the Lord that he was okay. That also praise God that the gunman didn't die and you know, he could have also been shot or fatally injured in some way. So praise the Lord that he's alive too. And maybe, you know, the Lord can do a lot of great work and maybe the Lord can do some work in changing his heart too.
Yeah, certainly the Lord's arm is not too short to save. So hopefully that's the case there in what is an extreme circumstance, obviously. And real quickly on this MIT story, I think this is interesting and noteworthy, guys, that you have a major university backtracking, it seems, on this DEI requirement. These professors there or anybody on staff had to make some sort of basically a statement of DEI, like a statement of faith for somebody working at a Christian company, right? But it's for their statement of faith is DEI. But they're saying it doesn't work. But whatever the reason, it seems like this is a step in the right direction.
Well, I think at the end of the day, everything that's enacted out of emotion needs to be questioned. You know, before we actually go, when people are feeling emotion and it happens after mass shootings, it happens after horrible events happen, whether we're talking about these sorts of policies or some other, you know, social standing or university policy bred on emotion, it's typically that it wasn't a good idea or that we should have thought deeper about it before we did it. And so I think I don't know why we haven't learned this lesson as humans that acting in that way, strictly on emotion without logic, is going to land us exactly where we are, where we're reassessing and wasting time trying to, now they're gonna have to come up with something else, right? And that's what's gonna happen now. They'll divert attention to some other, you know, and then there'll be an emotional moment and I'm sure we'll be right back here again in a year.
Yeah, I think it's the same. It's the safety versus freedom debate that we have all the time when it kind of like it happened after 9/11, obviously, and we put in all of these practices that, I mean, if you look up any study on the TSA, for example, they do practically no good whatsoever, but nobody would want to take them away because it just makes us feel safe. And I think a lot of that is the same with this stuff, though the chickens have come home to roost, I think, quicker and more clearly. We've seen this is actually not just a net neutral. This is actually causing a great deal of harm. So we need to get rid of it. But I 100% agree with what you're saying, Billy. If we're putting anything in place out of fear or some sort of other emotion, we should probably pump the brakes and maybe do a trial run before we implement this writ large around the country at universities and corporations like we have, when in reality, this has just wreaked havoc. It hasn't helped anybody.
No, it hasn't helped at all. I mean, by any objective standard, we are more divided now than ever before. And clearly that's one of the major factors driving it. So, you know, like we said, we'll see how other universities and institutions respond, if at all, to that news. All right, we're going to head to the focus story now. Police officers in Pakistan reportedly refused to help a Catholic family who fell victim to an attack by armed Muslims. What is the story here?
Yeah, this is a wild story. And of course, we only have the family's side of it. But what they're saying is that their farmland that they have long farmed on, they apparently started leasing this farmland back in 1989, that recently they ran into a problem where they had armed Muslims on April 16th coming to the scene of that farm while they were harvesting wheat and essentially attacking them. And so what was described as a very chaotic scene by one of the family members, Ashraf Yousaf, he said that it was just a crazy scene. You had all these dozens of people come, and they happened to be, according to this report, Muslims who came with guns and other weapons. He was attacked and beaten. When his siblings came to try to help him, they were attacked and beaten, and you know, fractured bones, you know, obviously some relatively, you know, serious issues that they're dealing with health-wise as a result of this. But apparently the perpetrators left the scene before the cops arrived. And then when the family went to go get medical treatment because of this beating, these Muslims apparently came back on the property and stole the wheat and the other food that they were growing. And I would mention that this is the family's only source of sustenance and income is this farm. So they don't have any other way of making money. This is how they, for decades, have done so.
Wow. And what do you... is driving? Do they know what is driving all the hatred that's going on here with this sort of incident?
It seems like there are some things going on in the background here. Apparently, the backstory is that this family was actually having a hard time paying for the farm. So in recent years, they have not been allegedly making the payments they need to on the farm. And so what ended up happening was last year, they were instructed that they were going to need to pay about $13,000 in U.S. money to keep the land. And so another sibling in the family, Shanez Yousef, said that the family scrambled to get the money they needed to. They were going to have to kind of put a big lump sum down and then pay little bits. As time went on, they were able to get that money. They did pay what they were told to pay. And you know, they were able to do that. They said months went by, there were no issues. And then suddenly they found out, even though they had paid what they were told they needed to, that they were going to be seeing the land go up for auction. And so the family went to court And this is where a lot of this started. They went to court to challenge that. They were able to get an injunction and they were able to stop officials from taking the land. And that's what sort of kicked this off, right? They happen to be a Catholic family. Obviously, these are Muslim groups. So there seems to be a religious aspect to it, but it started with the payments for the farm. And it just spiraled from there. Despite the court order, people came to take the land still. They still tried to do the auctioning of the land. It's a really, I mean, crazy story. They came on the land and started taking things. This is before the latest assault, and started, you know, messing up all of the farmland that they had cultivated. So this has been going back and forth. The law has been had been on the family's side, though. They were able to go and get help. But then when it came to the cops would not show up to help them. And in this latest issue with the attack, reportedly did not even arrest those responsible for leaving them in such dire straits.
Yeah, and that's the issue in places like Pakistan, where Christians are essentially treated as second-class citizens. So even if the initial target wasn't, well, they're Christians, we're going to go get them. It's like once there's any sort of conflict, well, if you're a Christian, good luck getting that dealt with. You know, you're going to have things like this happen where they just don't care. And, you know, the Muslims can run roughshod over Christians because of how they're generally treated over there. And what is the general persecution situation in Pakistan? It's not good.
No, it's not. And, you know, the family said that, you know, like we've lost everything, right? And we're not being treated as equal citizens. So everything you just said, the family has said that they've lost their livelihood, that whatever money they have left, they're trying to figure out how to treat their injuries from this attack. But it's not a good situation. They're ranked number 7 on the Open Doors World Watch list, which basically we've talked about this many times in the show. It ranks the worst Christian or the worst nations to be a Christian in the world, where it's the most dangerous. They are number 7. And it's crazy because they have these blasphemy laws that are used to target different minority groups. And Christians are obviously the most affected. Only 1.8% of the population is Christian, but they account for roughly a quarter of all these blasphemy allegations under the law that are waged. And just for context, in the case of this family, after all this happened, there were all these false charges brought against them. Then people make things up, right? They say, oh, this person injured so-and-so, or they did this. And so then they find ways to weaponize the law even further against them. So it's not a good situation, a lot to be praying for those in duress in Pakistan.
Yeah, I mean, certainly got to be praying for them because, I mean, it's hard to even fathom what they're dealing with over there.
Yeah, for sure. And this story kind of reminds me of back in 2020, 2021, during COVID, and a lot of countries where Christians face persecution. I remember covering some of those places, and a lot of the discrimination that Christians were facing, or persecution rather, that they were facing, was not direct persecution, and that it would be like, well, the food would be delayed getting to them, like places, communities where they were not able to get clean food and water. They were the lowest on the priority list. So they may or may not get food, and they certainly wouldn't get enough. Or if there's medical treatment, they would prolong getting medical treatment needed to the Christian communities and Christian encampments because they're Christians. So they don't deserve that kind of treatment. Whereas the Muslim community or Hindu community, depending on what country you're in, would get higher preferential treatment. So this kind of reminds me of some of that. It may not be always a direct attack, but it's still very much persecution, and it's still really hurting in really terrible ways the Christian communities in countries like Pakistan.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. And certainly we need to be praying for Christians. It's easy to forget about people like Pakistan. We just haven't talked about Pakistan a lot in the past few years. And it's easy to kind of forget that there are Christians in places like that where they're extreme minority and getting extremely persecuted in many instances. So certainly want to keep this family and then all Christians in Pakistan today on our prayer radars. Appreciate you putting that one on the podcast today. And now we're going to head on over to the main thing. And as I talked about at the top, the Jezebel spirit. Some people might be wondering, what is that? And this was brought to light after a recent Mark Driscoll interaction where he kind of accused this men's conference he was speaking at of having this Jezebel spirit. Well, Dr. Michael Brown joined Billy to explain more about that on today's main thing.
Well, Dr. Brown, as always, you have really interesting commentary on this most recent controversy to rock the church, the Mark Driscoll Jezebel controversy. And, you know, I want to get into not so much the controversy itself, but I do have a couple of questions for you, but mainly Jezebel, because the Jezebel spirit was one of the things that came up in this story with Mark Driscoll mentioning that Jezebel spirit. And you wrote a book a couple of years back called Jezebel's War with America, The Plot to Destroy Our Country and What We Can Do to Turn the Tide. So let's start with this general question. For those who don't know, who was Jezebel?
So Jezebel is arguably the most wicked woman in the Bible. She was a Phoenician princess and an ardent worshiper of Baal. She married King Ahab, and together they helped bring Israel down into deep idolatry. And of course, she had a great battle with the prophet Elijah. So she's associated with idolatry. She is associated with being seductive, with witchcraft. And the thing that people often refer to when they think of Jezebel and Ahab, or they'll say he's kind of an Ahab, meaning that she was seen to be very domineering, that she was the one that was guiding and driving some of the wickedness that took place, and that he didn't sufficiently resist it, just went along with it. And when we refer to Jezebel's spirit, the reason that we come up with the idea is that she's mentioned again in the New Testament, in the book of Revelation. And Jesus says to the church in Thyatira, you tolerate that woman called Jezebel, who claims to be a prophetess. Was it actually her name, Jezebel, or was that just the name given because she led people into sexual immorality and worship of idols, so similar to the Jezebel in the Old Testament? So when we refer to a Jezebel spirit, what we mean is the same demonic powers that operated through her, seductive, leading into idolatry, emasculating, etc., those same demonic powers operating today. And that's what Jezebel's War with America was about, to say, just look at this. Look at these things that are happening, from radical feminism to abortion, because in the ancient world, idols are often associated with child sacrifice, to porn and seduction, to the emasculating of men, et cetera. Put these things together. It's Jezebelic.
Yeah. And, you know, looking at America, as you said, and that's what you did in that book, you know, juxtaposing who she was and the spirits working through her and what we're seeing happen today. Were you shocked to see Jezebel sort of thrown out in the midst of this most recent, you know, conversation with Mark Driscoll, you know, or were you not shocked? I mean, you were one of the first people to sort of respond to it and do a write-up on it, giving your perspective.
Actually, I didn't even pay much attention to that part of it. I haven't followed Mark Driscoll's ministry or restoration or what he had written or said about it. It was more the larger controversy of the performance that was at the men's conference and then how it was handled. And I just had so many different people asking me about it, including leaders, the day everything surfaced, I thought I should reply to it. So the biggest controversies that I looked at were the performance itself, and then how it was handled by Mark Driscoll and then by Pastor John Liddell, whom I don't know either, you know, only heard good things about it within the Assemblies of God. But how it was handled, what was going on, what we could learn from it, and to me, that was the big thing. What are the edifying takeaways? I don't want to get caught up in the gossip column here, but what's our righteous response?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I love that we're getting a chance to sort of talk about the Jezebel piece, because again, when something gets thrown out there and it becomes a big, I mean, there's so many different pieces to this story. That was one that I thought, oh, this is interesting. We don't, you know, in certain circles, Jezebel is talked about, and obviously people who have read scripture will know who she is, but really understanding that spiritual nature of it, what do you say to those who will sort of point to people who are talking about Jezebel and they'll say, oh, there's no Jezebel spirit. That's, you know, they'll sort of dismiss, because some people, you know, have a very sort of fervent ideology around what they think that Jezebel spirit looks like. Others sort of reject it. But what do you say to those who would sort of dismiss the idea of talking about a Jezebel spirit as being problematic today?
Well, on the one hand, we have to be careful, because you'll have maybe in a church, you've got a woman who's very strong and full of the spirit and forceful, and well, she's a Jezebel, you know, and we have somebody we don't like and they're a Jezebel. So we have to be really careful about throwing that around. But for sure, a woman that wicked in the Bible and who had that much power and who was so intimidating was certainly demonized. And when we see those same spiritual characteristics at work, especially if we've ever encountered them, I mean, I had a few times over my life where there was no question that this was a confrontation with a Jezebelic spirit. So whether it's a principality, whether it's just demons working together, all we're saying is the same characteristics, this thing that comes in an emasculating way to cut you down, the thing that comes to intimidate, the thing that comes with a certain seduction, whatever it is, that when you see these things working together and there's a powerful demonic presence, or I encountered it in India only to find out that the place where we were going, the goddess that was worshipped was the most powerful demonic deity in the entire state that where we were in India, and had all these bizarre characteristics that once a year that the male followers of this so-called deity, Kanaka Durga, would dress up as women, that the statue of Kanaka Durga, there she's holding the hand in her hand, the head of the giant that she conquered. I'm thinking, boy, I'm experiencing this spiritually, then finding out these details. And now as the years gone on, Kanaka Durga has become the champion of the transgender movement in India. So even just the attack on fundamental male-female distinction. So there is a demonic realm that's real. There are spiritual beings that have certain characteristics and activities. We see that in the New Testament, you know, a deaf and dumb spirit. So a spirit that would make someone deaf and dumb. So we're just identifying, where's the spiritual warfare? And we're saying, hey, look, you can call it what you want to call it, but it's demonic, it's powerful, and it has these characteristics, and we need to be aware when these things are going on.
All right, Billy, thanks for that. It's always good to hear Dr. Michael Brown break things down. He does a good job, and I always appreciate his perspective on things, for sure. All right, that's going to leave us with time for one last thing today. We're going to look at 1 John 4:18. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment. Whoever fears has not been perfected in love.
Yeah, we can't be driven by fear. We have to overcome that. And I love that idea of God's love giving us the peace that we need to persevere through anything.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a good reminder that everything should start and end with the Lord.
Absolutely. All right. That is where we will leave it on this Tuesday edition of the Quick Start Podcast. As always, head on over to cbnnews.com and faithwire.com for more news from a Christian perspective. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise on us, we shall return tomorrow with more. God bless. We'll see you then.